Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, your journey into personal growth. The splendor of any decision is after you've made it. All that remains to be seen are its consequences. My name is Ken Primus. I am your host. Here at Threads of Enlightenment, we talk about the principles of self-development and personal growth. By having conversation with people who have walked through their journey of personal growth. We believe that everyone at some point in their life will have to deal with one or more of these principles to have the privilege of focusing on their self-development as humans. These principles, when applied, can help you to become the best self possible. Welcome to another episode of Threads of Enlightenment. We have Matt coming to talk to us today. And as you know, as we do here at Threads of Enlightenment, we turn it over to our guests. We welcome them. We are privileged and honored that a creator has come, presented themselves to us, and we want to get to know how they created what they have in their life today. So, Matt, welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, man.
Thanks so much, Ken. I just want to say it's an absolute honor to, you know, to be on the show and to be, you know, part of your community and to say hello to all your guests. And yeah, just, you know what, we had this little pre-interview beforehand, and it just, you know, it really, really resonated with me. So I'm going to do my best to do my part here. So my name is Matt Gardner. I have been going through quite a transformation. I'd like to view it as anybody that's familiar with like the hero's journey. That's sort of what I've been going through the last year. I feel like I've come full circle, kind of had my rebirth, and now I'm going back in. I'm going back in for more. So I'll elaborate a little bit on that. Where I am right now is I was coming out of a career that I've been doing for 23 years, and I just quit a couple weeks ago, actually. So I'm about 2 weeks into what I call like the rest of my life, my true calling. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And so I've been doing that job since I was 16 years old. No, it's not to backtrack too much, but I know you want me to kind of start where I am. But just to kind of give that little bit of backstory before we go back in time to that stage. But basically, what I've been doing now, Ken, is I've had this passion for coaching. I realized that a lot of what I was doing in my previous career was coaching and mentoring people. And so I had it kind of down to a science as far as the job, the ins and outs. Obviously, doing it for 23 years, I had my my whole presentation very refined and felt very confident about it. And we'll get into the reasons I left, but that was sort of where my passion lies. So I ended up taking a 6 month sabbatical last year between April and October, and that was, Ken, that was just based on a feeling like an intuition I had that something was not quite. I wasn't getting fulfilled by my career anymore, so it was time to just take some time. And I was always sort of fantasizing about taking this sabbatical, just and it wasn't for health reasons other than just my own exploration and my own personal exploration. And everybody kind of, it's funny that everybody's sort of like, is there something wrong with you? Are you sick? Are you dying? I'm like, no. I need to take some time away. Just, hit the pause button, get off the treadmill and recalibrate and see, kind of see what's out there. And I have this feeling inside me and I just want to pursue and kind of unpack what this feeling is. And that's what I did. I remember by day three of my sabbatical, I went for a big nature walk just by myself, and I just had all this flood of creativity. So I luckily had my cell phone with me, and I just had the voice recorder, and I just started riffing. I just started, our both musicians kind of just jamming, just improv, and it just had all this flood of ideas that I think was just waiting to come out. And I was like, where is this coming from? I truly felt that I had tapped into something.
Yeah.
And it was super cool. And honestly, that's been sort of the foundation for, what I've been working on since then. Obviously, it's taken on different shapes and it's refined itself. But that was the basis for it. Ken was like, day three, I was like, okay, this is the feeling that I have. And now I'm able to articulate it and put some action to it, which is incredibly exciting.
That's awesome.
The flip side of that too is, with uncertainty and change, you're going to have the lulls as well, right? Yeah. Like I was so more or less like sort of plateaued, and I knew where I stood with my career, and it felt comfortable. I was in the comfort zone, and you know, I'd make these incremental improvements and so forth, but I had never had this wide open space to create and reinvent myself, which on the flip side is as high as you can get with, you know, having your ideas come to fruition and being excited about it. We all know how, you know, exciting it can be, that the inception of an idea and seeing it come to fruition is one of the most exciting things that you can do as a creator.
Yeah.
But then you have those lulls. You got to remember that coming out of that, there comes the self-doubt and comes a degree of procrastination because you don't really know where to put the energy. And then you start getting hard on yourself and everything else that comes with creative blocks. So, so, you know, that's what I ended up doing is the court. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. I'm listening to the story. When you were talking, you reminded me of this, TV series I used to look at a long time ago called Manifest. And I call it The Calling. And I remember that TV show, they would call it The Calling when they'd have these little visions of things and they couldn't understand it. And it reminded me of something like that. When you and I are people like us that are in that space and you have this calling and you really don't know what it is, but you are not comfortable where you are, and then you begin to experience this deepness that it's, and it's stronger than people realize this. And that's why I call it The Calling, because you have to, it causes you to do something. And like you did, you began to unhook. Yep. And I believe that's the purpose of quote unquote, what I call The Calling, is to get us to unhook from the current program that you and I are running or in a part of, or actually that is running us. And this calling is calling us to unhook from that program so that we can have a new experience. I'm loving this story because it is really important. And you talked about some of those things that we have to deal with, and we'll go back and grab some of those things, the self-doubts and all those things, because I want you to talk to the people about some of those principles that resonated in you to cause you to use them to get to where your space is, because we use different tools based on who we are as individuals.
Absolutely. That's great. That's a good get me back on track here. So it's funny you mention that, because the first thing that came to mind for the first thing I pursued in my sabbatical, Ken, was exactly this idea, the idea of creating. And I've been a musician for by this point about 22 years, and I always felt that the creative arts, like arts and culture, had been sort of, you know, dismissed as important as it is for health and wellness.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to raise awareness for creativity artistic ventures as being a part of, we always talk about nutrition, we always talk about exercise and stretching, and those are all fantastic, of course. But somewhere way down the line is painting or learning an instrument. And so I really wanted to up the game on people's mentality as far as, everybody is a creator. And I always feel that, like, there's a lot of people that, you know, are told from an early age, you know, they try singing and somebody just dismissively goes, oh, you're not a singer, you're tone deaf.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they never start again. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is funny to think, Ken, because like, if somebody is like a little bit slow at reading when they're growing up, we don't go, oh, you can't read. Yeah. Don't even try. We encourage them. Yeah. We support them and then help them get to the stage that they are. Or you look on the flip side with sports. If somebody's not skilled at a sport, we put them in a basketball camp. Yeah. We help them. We support them. Yet I always found with arts, it's almost the opposite. You know, you're putting yourself out there. You're vulnerable. You're showing a drawing or a painting you've created, or reading a poem to somebody. And if all it takes is a teacher to say, that's no good, or a parent, worse yet, a parent to go, you're not a drawer, and then you never try again. Mm-hmm. So that was the whole idea of this online course that I created, and it's called Creative Minds Conservatory. And it's all about re-engaging your creative side, because I believe everybody's a creator, and that's why it's fantastic to be on the show. It's all about, creation and tapping into our inner artist. I believe everybody is an artist. I believe there's a Picasso statement of that. Everybody's an artist. It's hard to maintain that. I'm paraphrasing, but it's hard to maintain being an artist as we grow up. We talk about programming. We talk about different things we've picked up. So that's what it was. And it was, it's interesting.
Yeah. Matt, I believe that our life is an art. You're painting. You're painting that canvas. Your life is a piece of art, man. That's just my belief system is that.
Absolutely.
And that's why for me, absolutely, it's very painful when I hear people criticizing other people because they're painting their art. How can you, they're not turning around criticizing the art that you have created. So I find this attacking of each other's painting, if you will, very painful. As a society, when we look at each other and just come at each other in that fashion, because I believe that's who we are. We are naturally creative people. And because of that, you have genres, as you talked about, you have musicians, you and I talk, we're both musicians. We create writers, all of these things. When a guy is driving to a basket, or when a golfer is playing, that's art, man. I mean, because they're thinking a process by which how they're going to get to their goal of this basket or this hole or whatever. And they are creating in that space. And then you and I are experiencing a form of voyeurism as we watch this art being created in a live form. And that's how I feel people's lives are, man. That's just my take on this walk that we're in currently.
Ken, very well put. I couldn't put it better myself. I love the idea, this analogy that like our life is our masterpiece. Everything we do has artistic merits to it. Like you say, there's a process, there's creativity, there's whole brain, you know, the logic versus like the imagination. Yep. It combines and comes together. So, and you know what, if you look up the dictionary definition of artist, obviously there's the, you know, the obvious one of like somebody who pursues an artistic endeavor, but there's also, you know, the, you know, to your point, when you're talking about athletes, it's like you hear about Wayne Gretzky or Michael Jordan, they're like, man, that guy is an artist. Like Wayne Gretzky's an artist on the, it leans more so to somebody that's extremely skilled and gifted at something. Mm-hmm. They're an artist. You can have like the surgeon is an artist with a scalpel. Yes. There's just something about, you know, his process and the way that he just brings it together. So by that definition, to your point, everybody is an artist. Yeah. Everybody is there. There's something about you that you are just gifted and skilled at because you're passionate about it. You've put the experience, you've put your life experience into it. And by that definition, you are an artist.
Yes.
So everybody is an artist. So I wanted to get that. That's important to say because it's true. And a lot of people don't view themselves as that. Yeah. And it's a shame.
It's a shame. It truly is. And it's, Matt, let's go back a little as to, the beginning of your programming, and I believe we all began that programming in, from birth, and our parents and grandparents and all those folks. And I try to tell people that these people are all imperfect because of whatever background they came from, whatever, preconceived programming they already have. They are going to now deposit some of those into us. And so talk to me about the beginning of your family. How was your family life? How did you grow up? Siblings, that type of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I completely agree with that. I've done a lot of thinking about that exact subject as far as like ancestral, you know, patterns and karmas that have been passed down. Absolutely. I've been doing a lot of thinking about that recently, Ken. So yeah, to go back, you know, I had a fairly sheltered childhood for probably the first 12 years of my life. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. I have one older brother. He's 2 years older than me. And, you know, everything was pretty hunky-dory. We lived in a fairly, you know, smaller city. It was Prince George, British Columbia, Canada, about 80,000 people. We were kind of in a suburb of Prince George. So very sheltered. We were very, you know, we were able to do our thing. We had a forest right outside our backyard. I could literally hop the fence. So I spent a lot of time in nature and, you know, fairly comfortable upbringing. But my parents ended up getting a divorce when I was in grade 8. And in grade eight, in where I'm from, there's no middle school. So it was grade eight to 12. So I just started high school and I was very small at the time. And my parents were going through a fairly messy divorce. I felt very in between. I was kind of the moderator. I felt like I was the moderator between my two parents trying to, you know, say, oh, they didn't mean this or my dad didn't mean this that sort of thing. And I felt that was my duty to do. So I was trying to sort of temper their relationships, because, you know, as soon as lawyers get involved with a divorce, it starts getting very, that's kind of when things got fairly messy. So I was bringing that to school and it was a transitional time for me. I mean, you're starting to get interested in, you know, the opposite sex and, you know, it's a whole different thing. I'm going from elementary school where I'm like grade seven, the king of the hill, to this small, grade eight in the land of giants where you got these, you know, 18-year-olds that have mustaches and they're 6 feet tall and they look like adults to me. And I was a prime target for bullying for the first couple of years there. I was very shy because of everything that was sort of going on in at my home life. And then I'd take that to school and I think I just had this vibe to me. I was a little bit aloof and, you know, kind of had a confused or hurt look on my face and ended up, you know, kind of just keeping to myself, which of course is a beacon for bullies to kind of target you. So I definitely had some of that for the grade eight and nine until I was able to sort of, for better or for worse, I was able to overcome that simply by doing the if you can't beat them, you know, start. I basically was like beating them to the punch. I would start, if they did something to me, I'd just start laughing and they didn't get the reaction they wanted.
Yeah.
So like, oh, this guy, okay, that's not bugging him, right? Meanwhile, of course, it did bug me, but I figured out a way to sort of get them to perceive that I was no longer a fun target because I wouldn't get upset. I would, in fact, laugh at them when they bullied me. So it was very quick way to sort of dissolve that.
Yeah.
And what that did for me, Ken, is I was always friendly with every circle in high school after that, the labeling them all, you know, the jocks, the stoners, the musicians, the athletes, the nerds, the loners. I made sure to be very harmonious with everybody because I knew what it felt like to be an outcast and how bad that feels, how rough that makes you feel. So that was a big thing for me. And I've carried that into my adult life, just making sure that I, and being a musician as well, I fancy myself trying to make everything harmonious. Yeah. I'm not as big on confrontation as a result, which has been kind of one of my weaknesses as well. I like just everything to kind of fit together and everybody, let's all get along, you know, within reason. Obviously we have to, you know, step in and show our boundaries in a healthy way as well. So that was a big part of it. And one other thing I'd like to throw in there, Ken, that was my Achilles heel was alcohol. So I got into playing in a band about 16. Was my first group of friends that I had in high school. And one friend had a set of drums. I got a guitar. My other friend had a guitar. So we started experimenting with the rock and roll lifestyle, shall we say. So I started that fairly early on. And being in a band, it's like one of the only jobs that encourage you to drink on the job, it would seem. I'm sure you remember this, right? You know, it's you show up to a venue and they're like, here's some drink tickets. Thanks for playing tonight. It's like, you know, there's some beers in the back there for you. And it's like, okay. It's kind of funny to think, right? It's the only job they're like, yeah, drink up. You drink on the job. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Very strange when you think about it that way, but that's hand in hand with music. So, and that was my big thing to overcome, Ken, was the drinking. It got to the stage that, you know, you go through different stages and initially it's kind of this thing that's helping me get out of my shell, or so I perceived anyways. It's my best friend, right? It's like alcohol puts its arm around me and goes, you know, you don't have to be shy. And you know what? I'll give you the courage to go talk to that girl you like. And, you know, all these different things. It fills in a lot of gaps for you and checks a lot of boxes initially. And, you know, towards my mid-20s and 30s, it really started turning on me. So that was what I had to, you know, overcome, you know, in order to kind of get to the stage that I'm at now. That was my big thing. That was my outlet for my frustrations with, you know, with the divorced parents and such, for sure.
It's how you're explaining, because I know the divorce rate is a pretty high number within the you know, the space of humanity today. And you have the kids that are in there, and the parents are going through this traumatic time, the separation, and the kids are in the middle of this traumatic time. And everyone has to find a way to cope in this trauma that is just an onset. And everyone finds their middle ground, I guess, their space of peace after the war, of the emotional turmoil tossing back and forth. But we all have to find something, how to cope. And I love the way that you took something that people were utilizing against you, and you turned it in a way and gained a type of power from it, because that's what it was, that they used it to belittle you or to put you in a space, but you took that power away from them. And as you grew, and you got into the music, I tell people we get busy and skillful in learning how to hide, and how not to, how we manage our situation in life. We get very skillful in it. And we have, you started to bring in the additional stuff of alcohol within the space of music. It is the coolest thing, because I remember when, playing and stuff like that, and that's the first thing they'll give you is that drink. Many of us lose control. It becomes the master of us, versus we mastering it. And so it ends up to be a coping mechanism by which we utilize to help us to move from one space to another. And I tell people, once you realize these things, you will begin to learn a little about yourself, because you, when you were talking about that hit on your head that comes on later on, that begins to question, man, how did this happen to me? What happened? So talk to us, a little more, as we're moving from the space now. You're introduced to music in a sense. You have the band, you have your alcohol, and you're moving from that space. Talk to us about some of those demons, Matt, that you started to identify, because we start looking at some of them around there. You know, what were they, and how did you begin to have your conversation with them?
Yeah, great question. First off, I love what you said when you're mentioning we get very skilled at hiding. Yeah. Or like I'm just kind of coming to that now, Ken, that a lot of my patterns that I've been running have been creating these like scenarios so I can push down my true feelings, right? Yeah. So I've always had an issue with feeling significant. And instead of just acknowledging that and being comfortable with that and talking to my inner child and doing the healing, I panic and I go, oh no, it's okay. Like I'll hop on the computer now and just don't worry about it. Like I'll figure out something to do. Right. And I'm literally just now, it's so funny, right? I'm 40 years old and I'm just now realizing that was the pattern I've been doing my entire life. I've been intentionally silencing what my inner child is saying or desiring instead of just giving it to my inner child. I go, it's okay that you feel insignificant. So I just wanted to touch on that, because it's amazing the way that you phrased it. And it's so important for everybody to hear. So thank you for bringing that up.
No problem.
So as far as I'm going to give two major points of when we're talking taps on the shoulder. These ones were the smacks on the head. So I was getting a lot of the taps on the shoulder. I was acknowledging it. I'm a very spiritual person. Mm-hmm. So I've always been sort of open to synchronicities what I believe is like my ancestors that are, in heaven or whatever you believe, the afterlife that are kind of guiding me. And I do very much believe in that. And so I was aware of these types of things happening, in relation to my drinking and my life path that I was on. What it took was I was at 27 years old. It was 2008. I ended up actually hospitalizing myself with acute pancreatitis from over drinking. And I was in the hospital for 3 days. And I honestly, at one point, thought I wasn't going to make it. Like I was in an incredible amount of pain. Anybody that's had, acute pancreatitis, it's no you know, no laughing matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember it being on, you know, on the hospital bed. Like, it took them a good few hours to figure out what was even wrong with me before they could get me any kind of, you know, pain management or anything like that. So I just remember, you know, being in the hospital for 3 days, really reflecting on my life. And I'm like, man, I'm 27. Like, what am I doing to myself? And, you know, like, this is truly my, you know, the whole thing, whole time, this is truly my, my second chance. So as soon as I get out of here, I'm going to live life to the fullest. And, you know, it's going to be, things are going to be different.
Yeah, yeah.
But so guess, you know, guess what I did 24 hours of getting out of the hospital. I had a beer in my hand, yeah. Right? I'm like, yo, I dodged a bullet. I actually feel fine now.
Yeah.
That was scary. It's behind me now. I can still drink. So the thing was, and this is, insight into like the addict brain, it was just, what it is, I changed what I was drinking. So for me, it was like, okay, I can't drink rye anymore because the, you know, the dark liquor, hard liquor is what did this to me.
Yeah.
Beer is fine. Beer, nobody ever gets sick off beer. It's hard to get hungover, right? You pee every couple beers. So you're getting it out of your system. Yeah. It's all good. I can do beer. So, you know, so that's, you know, how ridiculous that is to look back on it. But yeah, that's what I did. And then, so, you know, before you know it, I'm up to, you know, 20 beer a night. I'm, you know, and it's just, I've just replaced one thing for another. And, and, you know, so I went with that for a few more years. And fast forward to, I turned 30 and had some issues with a group, my girlfriend, my long-term girlfriend. We had a pretty rough, a couple of years apart. We're back together and we're actually engaged now, and 15 years, going on 15 years. So, but we had a couple of years that we, were apart because we had to kind of get some things out of our system, I think. Mm-hmm. So, and anyways, I was having a rough time with that. And I was just over drinking. And one night I don't know if you can still see, I got a bit of a scar on my forehead. I decided I wanted to have some cigarettes because, you know, cigarettes and beer go so well together. So, but I hadn't been smoking for quite some time. And anybody that knows that feeling, you get a very massive head rush. And I was like, oh man, I got to go downstairs and relax for a bit. And that's all I remember. I remember coming to and everybody around the party was like, are you okay? And I was like, whoa, what's going on? And I cracked my head open and there's blood all over the, you know, the concrete floor. And somebody just said it sounded like a watermelon. So I must've not got my hands up. I just, just went right down and, you know, went back to the hospital again, got stitched up and had a really, really bad concussion, Ken. Like I definitely had, like, I guess the post-concussion syndrome. And the thing was, I kept drinking or attempting to, but anybody that's had a concussion and tried drinking, it really doesn't go well at all. Yeah. You know, I had one beer, I'd just go blank white. I wouldn't be finishing sentences. I'm pretty much drooling on myself. My blood pressure's through the roof. It's just, I was just a mess. And, you know, it kind of took some time to bounce back from that. So as I was recovering from that is when we really had the big breakup, myself and Darcy. And I was just like, I can't keep living like this. So, I took 5 weeks off work and I went to my first AA meeting, and a good friend of mine, Brent, who's no longer with us, unrelated. He had a diabetic complications. He passed away at 33, but, you know, he took me to my first AA meeting. He had been through some, Narcotics Anonymous and, AA meetings himself. And he's the guy that took me to my first one, and I never would have gone if he hadn't supported me with that. And that literally changed the trajectory of my life, because I wouldn't have gone in there by myself. As soon as I got to the parking lot, I was like, okay, this is close enough for me. I'm good now. And then I remember Brent, just in his own way, he's so like happy. Yeah. And he just looked at me. He's like, man, no, it's all good. We'll go in there. It'll be fun. I'm like, okay. So I go in there, Ken, and the first words of, after I sat down, the first words, I don't even remember what they were, but there was just an energy shift.
Yeah.
And I felt, I hold my stress in my shoulder and my neck.
Yeah.
And I literally felt weight come off of me, and I started kind of tearing up, and I was like, okay, something is different. Something is different. And that propelled me for 3 years and 3 months after that, sober and alcohol free. And I just, my life completely changed. Everything started really upping, and I was just like, I'd never felt that, because I'd never been alcohol free since I'd been 16. So it was this huge freeing, experience for me. And what happened after that is I said the three words that you should never say when you're, an addict of any kind is, I got this. So I felt I had enough life skills to try on drinking again and have moderation.
Yeah.
And I tried with 0% success rate for the next 4 years to add moderation back into my my life. And you know what? So it was April 2019. I had just a really sloppy party weekend that my dad passed away right before Christmas 2018, and he never kind of broke that curse. He had the hard living. He was a drinker and smoker. And I believe that's, that kind of lifestyle. He was 66 when he passed away. That's what led to his untimely demise. And I used that, Ken, basically coming out of that weekend, I had to leave that Monday morning to go to my dad's celebration of life. And that's back in my hometown, and it was about an 8-hour drive. And the whole way out there, I was just doing a lot of reflecting. I had the music off. It was just silent in the car. I was just with my own thoughts very intentionally. And I was doing some of that voice recorder stuff. And I was just, the stuff that was coming out of my mouth was starting to scare me, because I was getting very dark and, started to have some suicidal ideation and things of this. And I decided on that drive that, as a tribute to my dad and my family, both sides of my family have issues with alcohol. I am going to take it upon myself to stop. And we were talking about ancestral healing and stopping programming and karma and such. And I am going to take it upon myself to, it stops with me. I am that's where I am. I've been sober. I'm coming up on 3 years, alcohol free now. And the anchor thought being the reason beyond me, outside of me, is to honor my family name on both sides of my family and to honor my dad as well, as far as just staying clean and sober and then helping other people as well. Because I feel I'm still attached to it enough that I'm not, it's still fresh in my head and I know what people are going through. And, if I can do it, certainly you can. And that's kind of where I'm at now, Ken.
Yeah, it's a powerful story, Matt, just absolutely powerful. And I love what the tool that you use to propel yourself from the state that you are living and how you moved from there. And the fact that you say that you now want to help people and stuff. And I always encourage people. The process, I believe personally, Matt, for you and I to go through our stages of enlightenment is so that you and I can become teachers, conduit by which we can now turn back and assist those. We are assisting them to bring them aware of. Basically, a life coach's position is to make them aware of who they are and how powerful they are. And I look at Jesus as one of the life coaches, that we have documentation that you could see how he did it. He went to these guys, he picked a bunch of people, and every time he did something marvelous, he looks at them and he says, they're calling on him to do something. He says, "Where's your faith? You can do the same thing. I mean, you can do the same thing." We saw that actually Peter did the same thing that he did. Peter got up and walked on water just like he. So you and I can walk on water, but I believe that life taps a few people on the shoulders to make us aware, because we can be trusted with what we will do with the information. I know many people, Matt, that have gone through, and they have become, they were selfish and never were able to turn back to assist someone to bring them out. But I love hearing the story, those that are not selfish, those that are true life coaches. The people that turn to people and direct to them the power that they are, the creators that they are. And as they got their revelation as to who they are, man, just like you began to get your revelation as to who you are, you use your reasoning was to be this different so that both families can see. You want to honor them. Your reasoning that you utilize to cause you to plant that seed, to push right through, to bring all your emotional, all your the other things that you have to come and overcome to get to you where you're now.
Thanks. Have created you got a real way with words, Ken. I love the analogy and the comparison.
You can now utilize.
I never thought of it like that. Jesus being like, you know, one of the first life coaches. So cool. So cool. Them. And yeah, you're absolutely your story, right. Man. And that's, I guess, what leads us to, you know, my current stage here. And that's what I've been pursuing for the past, let's say, eight or 10 months. I've been taking some absolutely wonderful coaching certifications. So I feel very like my energies have been focused and refined, and I have, like, to your point, a program. I just released a free ebook that will, you know, I'll send you the link for any of your listeners that would care to read it. It's a 45-page memoir, basically, of my you know, trials and tribulations with alcohol. So I call it Recovery Roadmap, and it is my personal, you know, hero's journey. And I want to elaborate a little bit on that. I'm sure everybody's heard of the hero's journey, but I love using the analogy or just the visual of it. And it shows up so often in books and, you know, movies and so forth. And basically the three stages being, you know, that's, again, sort of almost a tap on the shoulder, a calling, a realization that something isn't right with your life, and you're about to go on a journey, this hero's journey. So stage two is kind of when you go into that lull, that dark night of the soul sort of thing, where you have that ego dissolve and you're realizing your energies, what you have to do with them. And you realize that there's going to be some work, and you're kind of going into almost like a downswing. They call it like the cave, right? The innermost cave, where you have to really confront a lot of your crap, your BS. You got to call yourself out on this. And then you come out, and you have this period of rebirth, or reborn. You integrate all these new life lessons and everything that you've put towards. And to your point, the most important part of that is you come back home. It's a full circle, and you come back home with this new knowledge. And then at that point, it's up to you to then help other people and help elevate them. Yes. And then you can go through the you don't have just one. Life is continually going through this hero's journey. So I truly believe I completed my one, and I'm going back in. And I, you know what? I am not afraid of going to those dark areas anymore, because I know what happens when you come back out of it. And just, I love it, man. And that's where.
Yep.
Yes.
That's where our creative power is seen, though, Matt. It's not seen when everything is good and rosy, is it? It is seen in the dark places, because, and I use the analogy, this is the analogy that I use. We're looking at God as the premier creator, and he comes out and he looks out, and the place was dark and messy, man. And then he started creating what he wanted. He said, I needed light. I got a plan that I'm putting together, that I want to put this creation of mine on this planet and give him dominion over this universe. But where I'm looking at right now, and that place is dark. So I have to create. And so it is in the dark places, man. And I tell people, do not be afraid of the dark places. It is the place that you are the most powerful that you will ever be. Because that's when you turn and you look at that situation and you do the same thing that God did. He said, he spoke into it. He said, let there be light. And you and I say stuff like, I am not going to be, this is not where I want to be. I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to change. And so we began to speak darkness, man.
Ken, I got
to
give you props, man. You're a fantastic host. I can see why you're not afraid of it. Well, you have a very powerful way of speaking
even greater aspects,
you know, and framing things. I love it. I just love it. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, thanks, man. Thank you. But Matt, I want to thank you, man, for coming. I love this story that you have talking about and you're sharing, and that you're opening up to people to see that we are human spirits. We are creators. We do not have to stay in the circumstances that we are currently in. You don't have to settle. That is the whole purpose of Matt talking with us and sharing his story to show you that you don't have to settle. Doesn't matter how bad it gets, how dangerous it gets. He got hurt to the place where he's in the hospital. I mean, he's telling us the stories and some of the things and some of the dark places that he visited. And he's now standing and he has presented a product by which you, the listener that is going through a similar story like he is, your canvas looks familiar. You have someone that you can utilize and talk to ask him, how did he mix that color to get that outcome? How did he put, what did he use? What combination of colors did he use to bring out the canvas that he has today? And it is my hope that you guys get in touch with Matt, man, and talk to him. How did he, what colors did he mix so that he can get you in a space where you are? And you do that, you have that conversation with him when you purchase his books, when you get into his class, when you get those things. And I always say to people, when you buy someone's book, you're having a one-on-one with Matt. You're having a personal conversation. Your space is comfortable. And then you begin to open this page and you begin to read and have a personal conversation with Matt, and where he's able to talk to you via those pages and the words that he wrote because he experienced
absolutely those, very well put. Thank you so much for being generous about that, Ken. So
power,
basically exactly, just to kind of to wrap it up as far as the offer and all that,
yes,
I do have the ebook,
and I know
which is sort of it was very cathartic for me. It was a experience of, and it works twofold, because it's a very empathetic, like you say, it's like a, you know, a private conversation with me, and I'm confessing, you know, I'm coming fully clean with all the good, the bad, the ugly about my experience, specifically about my addiction and overcoming it. And, you know, there's some humor in there and there's, you know, some painful spots where you kind of go, man, why can't you snap out of this? I always find it fascinating hearing about how strange of behaviors, and it is somewhat humorous, right? With that, when you're just like, wow, what would, why were you doing this kind of stuff? And, you know, coming out of it though, I have a fairly strong set of, you know, like basically I call it my roadmap, the things that I transferred this negative, all-encompassing, draining energy of an addiction and getting that out of my system, and then allowing this other set of energies in, and what I did with that energy in order to keep myself in a better frame of mind. And so that's all what that book is about. And that's an invitation from there to, you know, come onto the website. I do have a, you know, sort of all-encompassing coaching package, which has 4 one-on-one coaching calls. I do obviously a free consultation as well, just to kind of open that relationship with you. And they're working on a course right now that basically it has sort of the four pillars. You have access to the course the whole time. It's just about the way we talked about our inner dialogue. It's reframing some of our language, you know, getting rid of certain words that we've been using, that we've learned. You've talked a lot about on the show about programming, words like should, and words like I could do this, and being indecisive with ourselves and ambiguity, you know, with this level of ambiguity, removing that and just plucking out certain words, putting in different words.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the sentence is the same, and it just completely shifts the power of the sentence that you're telling yourself. Basically, taking a state of negation and then charging it as an affirmation. The exact same sentence, just pluck a couple words out. So it's all about language, correcting the language in these programs that we've learned from elementary school, let's face it, from our parents.
Absolutely.
And nothing, I'm not calling out any teachers or parents. That's the way they learned, and that's just the way that we've been going about things. Also, get into I just completed a certification in sound therapy. So there's a custom sound therapy track that I will make for you, depending on, you know, a questionnaire, just getting a little bit about like some of your ailments, if you're prone to headaches or if you're having trouble sleeping. So that's a very unique offering that sort of ties in with this, because, you know, I, both being musicians, know the power of, you know, vibration and frequency healing and such. So getting into that as well. Getting into some guided meditation, properly breathing. I found a lot of people are in that sort of mild stress response most of their days. So their breathing stays up very high in their chest. So spending the time to getting back into that nice abdomen breathing and getting into the parasympathetic, you know, nervous system. And that is where you do all your creation. Yeah. That's where you're going to come up with, you know, more positive thoughts about your life and everything. So it's sort of this all-encompassing holistic approach to getting yourself unstuck, focusing on that, getting that stagnant energy moving. If you do have, I'm sure that, you know, addictions show up differently for different people, whether it's sugary foods, video games, whatever it may be that's distracting you from the true version of yourself. So releasing that energy and then inviting in your creator energy. And from there, that's when you set goals. You don't set goals until you calibrate, recalibrate. Yeah, yeah. So that's what it's all about, Ken. It's and I call it the Recovery Roadmap is the program. And the ebook, the sort of the invitation to open our relationship, is obviously free. And you know, just to kind of put myself out there, show that I'm vulnerable. I am by no means a perfect person, but I'm working on it. So that is the package as of right now. And I really appreciate you, Ken, and to all your listeners for allowing me to come on and talk about it today.
Yes, yes. Oh, my pleasure, man. I am actually glad that the people get a chance to hear what you have created. As I mentioned, creators will always be on the move. And I guarantee you, 6 months down the road from here, Matt has created something different as well, because of the, he's talked about this new journey that he's about to engage in. And I'm sure as he goes into that journey, he will extrapolate wisdom, knowledge, and tools that you and I can utilize to assist us to become better human spirits while we occupy this planet called Earth. I really appreciate you, Matt, coming by and depositing such beautiful energy and power to us, that it is my hope that those that are listening to this podcast, as they hear what his story is, that you can go and find his information. We are going to provide that as well, so that you can I want you guys to bond yourself with him, get his books, get to his program, so that you can now be one of his disciples, as Jesus created those, and those disciples changed the world. Because I want to hear Matt tells me about some of his disciples.
Ken, my pleasure, my absolute honor. Thank you very much. I feel incredibly blessed for you having me on the show and our time today. I feel very connected with you. We're definitely safe to say, you know, we're going to be you know, long-term friends coming out of this. I feel very connected with you. So thank you very much.
Oh, most definitely. Thank you so much.
Everyone who's listening to this podcast, we hope to continually help you to learn how to embrace moments of darkness, because it is in the darkness that we learn how to develop and use our abilities to truly see those parts of ourselves often invisible to us in the light. It becomes your responsibility to navigate through all of your trials to find out who you truly are and begin your journey to loving yourself, which is possibly one of the most difficult things you will ever do in your life. To love yourself and to find the real you. But always remember to enjoy the journey. Thank you for coming by. Please subscribe. And if you can support us financially, We deeply appreciate it. You can do this by hitting the heart button. Until next time, invite your family, friends, neighbors, anyone that you can. You can hear us on Buzzsprout, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Overcast, and many more.